Welcome to Thrilling Tales of Adventure. I'm Mardell, reading Martin Connersby's Vengeance by Jeffrey Farnall. Chapter 20. I go to seek my vengeance. Next day, just as the sun rose, I buried resolution, twixt Joanna and the sea, yet over him I raised no mound, since I judged he would have it so. Thereafter I ate and drank, and stored the boat with such things as I needed for my voyage, and particularly with good supply of fruits. And now, though the wind and tide both served me, I yet lingered, for it seemed that the spirit of Joanna still tarried hereabouts. Moved by sudden desire, I began searching among the tumbled boulders that lay here and there, and presently, finding one to my purpose, urged it down the sloping beach, and with infinite pains and labor, contrived at last to set it up at the head of Joanna's resting place. Then, taking hammer and chisel, I fell to work upon it, heedless of sun glare, of thirst, fatigue, or the lapse of time, staying not till my work was complete. And this no more than two words, cut deep within the enduring stone, these: Joanna, unfearing. And now at last, the tide being on the turn, I unmoored the boat, and thrusting her off, clambered aboard and betook me to the oars. And ever as I rowed, I kept my gaze upon that small, solitary heap of sand until it grew all blurred upon my sight. Having presently made sufficient headway, I unshipped oars, and hoisting my sail, stood out into the immeasurable deep. But with my eyes straining towards that stretch of golden sand, where lay all that was mortal of Joanna. And with my gaze thus fixed, I must needs wonder what was become of the fiery, passionate spirit of her, that tameless soul that was one with the winds and stars and ocean, even as resolution had said. And thus I presently fell a-praying, and my cheek wet with tears, that I thought no shame. When I looked up, I saw that the narrow strip of beach was no longer in sight. Joanna had verily gone out of my life, and was but a memory. All afternoon I held on before a fair wind, so that as the sun sank, I saw the three islands no more than a faint speck on the horizon. Wherefore, knowing I should see them no more in this life, I uncovered my head, and thus it was, indeed, I saw Joanna's resting place for the last time. And now, as the sun slipped westward and vanished in glory, even now as night fell, I had a strange feeling that her spirit was all about me, tender and strong and protecting, and herein, as the darkness gathered, I found great comfort, and was much strengthened in the desperate venture I was about. Having close reefed my sail and lashed the tiller, I rolled myself in a boat cloak, and nothing fearing, presently fell asleep, and dreamed Joanna sat above me at the helm, stooping to cover me from the weather, as she had done once before. Waking next morning to a glory of sun, I ate and drank, albeit sparingly, and fell to studying Adam's chart, whereby I saw I must steer due southwesterly, and that by his calculation I should reach the mainland in some 5 or 6 days. Suffice it that instead of 5 days, it was not until the 10th day, my water being nigh exhausted, and I mighty downcast that I had sailed out of my proper course, that I discovered, to my inexpressible joy, a faint blue haze bearing westerly, that I knew must be the main. And now the wind fell so that it was not until the following morning that I steered into a little green bay, where trees grew to the very water's edge, and so dense that, unstepping my mast, I began paddling along this green barrier, looking for some likely opening. And thus presently came, on a narrow cleft, mid the green, where ran a small creek, roofed in with branches, vines, and twining boughs, into which I urged my boat forthwith, and no little to do, and passed immediately from the hot glare of sun into the cool shade of trees and tangled thickets, having forced myself a passage so far as I might, by reason of these leafy tangles. My next thought was to select such things as I should need, and this took me some time, I deeming so many things essential, since I knew not how far I might have to tramp through an unknown country, nor in what direction Nombre de Dios lay. But in the end I narrowed down my necessities to the following: a good compass, a perspective glass, a sword, two pistols, a gun with powder horn and shot for same, a light hatchet, a tinder box, and store of buck and meat. And now, having belted on sword and pistols, and wrapping the other things in one of the boat cloaks, I strapped the unwieldy bundle to my shoulders, and taking up the gun, scrambled ashore, and having found my bearings, set off due southwesterly. Hour after hour I struggled on, often having to hew myself a passage with my axe, until towards evening I came out upon a broad ride or thoroughfare amid the green, which greatly heartened me, since here was evidence of man's handiwork and must soon or late bring me to some town or village. Forthwith, my weariness forgotten, I set off along this track, my face set ever westwards. But presently my vaunting hopes were dashed, to find the track could be very little used nowadays, since here and there great trees had fallen and lay athwart my going, and presently the way narrowed to a mere path, and this crossed here and there by hanging vines, which was sure proof that few, if any, had passed this way these many months, mayhap years. Hereupon I stopped to lean despondent on my gun and looked about me, and with dejection of mind came weariness of body, and seeing night was at hand, I determined to go no farther, and turned in among the trees, minded to sleep here, though the place was wild and forbidding enough. I had just loosed off my heavy pack, when the pervading stillness was broken by a wailing cry, so sudden, so shrill and evil to hear, that my flesh crept, and I huddled against a tree, peering into the deepening shadows that had begun to hem me in. At first I judged this some wild beast, and reached for my musket. Then as the sound rose again, I knew this for human cry, for I heard these words: "Mercy, signors, mercy, for the love of God!" Hereupon I began to run towards whence came this dismal outcry, and presently espied the glow of a fire, and creeping thither discovered four men grouped about a fifth, and him fast bound to a tree, and this poor wretch they were torturing with a ramrod heated in the fire. Even as I watched, he writhed and screamed for the intolerable pain of it. Staying no more, I burst upon them, and leveling my piece at the chief tormentor, pulled the trigger, whereupon was no more than a flash of the flint. It seemed that in my hurry to be gone, I had forgotten to load it. Howbeit, loaded or not, it served me well enough, for swinging it by the barrel, I was upon them, or ever they were aware, and smote down two of the rogues, whereupon their comrades betook them to their heels with the utmost precipitation. I therefore proceeded to cut the sufferer loose, who, sinking to the earth, lay there muttering and groaning. "Are you much hurt?" I questioned, stooping above him. Whereupon he spat forth a string of curses, by which I judged him English, and very far from dying, as I had feared. I now found myself master of four very good guns, a sword, a steel headpiece, two cloaks, another furniture with food aplenty, and 3 flasks of wine. I was yet examining these and watching against the return of their owners, when hearing a sound, I saw the late poor captive bending above the 2 men I had felled. "Are they dead?" I questioned. "Nay, not yet, master. Give 'em 6 minutes, or say 10, and they'll be as dead as the pig you ate of last." "How so?" I demanded, staring at the wild, ragged figure of the man. "By means of this, master," said he, and stooping towards the fire, showed me a middling-sized blackthorn upon his open palm. "Not much to look at, master, no, but 'tis death, sure and sartin. Howsomever, I've many more besides. I make 'em into darts and shoot 'em through a blowpipe, a trick I learned of the Indians. I always spits 'em through a pipe, which is better than your guns. No noise, no smoke, and sure death wherever it sticketh."
"Are you an Englishman?"
"I am that. Born within sound of Bow Bells, 'tis all of 20 years since I heard 'em, but they ring in my dreams sometimes. I shipped on a venture to the main 20 years ago, and fought and rioted as a man may, and by ill luck fell into the hands of the bloody Spaniards along of 6 other good lads. All dead long since, master. Then the Inquisition got me, and was going to burn me, but not liking the thought on't, I turned Roman. Then they made me a slave, but I got away at last. Ha ha! All Spanishers are devils for cruelty. But their churchmen are worst, and of all their churchmen, the coldest, softest, bloodiest is Alexo Valdez, chief inquisitor of Nombre de Dios yonder.
Ha! You know Nombre de Dios?
I lived there and suffered there, master. 'Tis there I be a-going for to make an end of bloody Valdez, if God be kind.
Then, said I, we will travel so far together.
And what doth an Englishman the like of you want with the accursed place? The Inquisition is strong there.
'Tis a matter of life and death, said I.
Death, said he. Death, they should all be dead and rotting if I had my way.
So saying, this strange man, whose face I had scarce seen, laid him down beyond the fire and composed himself to slumber.
How then, I demanded, will you sleep here in the wild and no watch?
I will that, said he. I know the wilderness, and I've endured much a hardship of late, and as to watching, there's small need. The rogues you fell upon, being Spaniards, will doubtless be running yet, and nigh into Nombre by now.
How far is it hence?
12 leagues by the road, but less the ways I travel.
Good, said I, though 'tis hard going, no matter.
Why then sleep, for we march at dawn, and my name is John.
And mine Martin.
Why then, Martin, good night.
Good night, John.
Howbeit, though, and despite his hurts, my companion presently slept and snored lustily, and though I kept myself awake and my weapons to hand, yet I fell a-nodding, and at last, overcome with weariness, sank to sleep likewise. I waked to find the sun up, and the man John shaking me, a wild, unlovely, shaggy fellow, very furtive of eye and gesture, who cringed and cowered away as I started up.
"Lord, man," quoth I am no enemy.
"I know it," said he, shaking his tousled head, "but 'tis become natural to me to slink and crawl and blench like any lash curl all along of these accursed Spaniards. I've had more kicks and blows than I've lived days," he growled, munching away at the viands he had set forth.
"Have ye suffered so much, then?"
"Suffered!" cried he with a snarl. "I've done little else. Ah, when I think of what I endured, I do love my little blowpipe."
"Blowpipe?" I questioned.
"Aye, this.
and speaking from somewhere among the pitiful rags that covered his lank carcass, he drew forth a small wooden pipe, scarce 2 foot long and having a bulbous mouthpiece at one end. "The Indians use 'em longer than this, 6 feet I've seen 'em, but then, Lord, they'll blow ye a dart from 80 to 100 paces sometimes, whereas I never risk a shot farther away than 10 or 20 at most, the nearer the shore, aha." Hereupon he nodded, white teeth agleam through tangled beard, and with a swift, stealthy gesture, hid the deadly tube in his rags again. "What of the 2 Spaniards I struck down last night?" I questioned, looking vainly for them. "The bushes yonder," said he with a jerk of thumb. "I hit 'em, master, they being a little unsightly, black and swole. This is the nature of this poison." Hereupon I rose, and going to where he pointed, parted the undergrowth, and saw that this was indeed so, insomuch that my stomach turned, and I had no more desire for food. "You murdered those men?" "Oy, that I did, master, and you call it murder. Albeit, there's more shall go the same road yet, notably Alexo Valdez, a curse on him."
"And you are an Englishman?"
"I was, but since then I've been slave to be whipped, dog to be kicked, Lutheran dog to be spat upon, and lastly Indian."
"And what now?"
"A poor soul to be tormented, shot, hanged, or burned as they will once I'm taken."
"And yet you will adventure yourself to Nombre de Dios?"
"Why, Alexo Valdez has lately come there, and Alexo Valdez burned my friend Dick Burbage, as was prentice with me at Johnson's, the Cutler's, and Friday Street, nigh Paul's, 20-odd years agone."
And in a while, being ready to start, I proffered this wild fellow one of the Spaniards' guns, but he would have none of it, nor sword, nor even cloak to cover his rags. So, in the end, we left all things behind, and there they be yet, for aught I know. Now, as we journeyed on together, in answer to my questioning, I learned from this man John something of the illimitable pride and power of the Church of Rome. More especially, he told me of the Spanish Inquisition, its cold, merciless, and passionless ferocity, its unsleeping watchfulness, its undying animosity, its constant menace, and the hopelessness of escape therefrom. He gave me particulars of burnings and rackings. He described to me the torments of the water, the wheel, and the fire, until my soul sickened. He told me how it menaced alike the untrained savage, the peasant in his hut, and the noble in his hall. I heard of parents who, by reason of this corroding fear, had denounced their children to the torment, and children their parents.
"Oh, and there was a Donna Bianca of Alambrosa, a fine woman I mind, was suspected of Lutheranism, so they racked her, and she in torment confessed whatsoever they would, and accused her sister, Donna Luisa, likewise. So they burned 'em both, and made 'em pay for stake and chain and faggots too afore they died."
Many other horrors he recounted, but ever and always he came back to the name of Alexo Valdez to vomit curses upon, until at last I questioned him as to what manner of man this was to behold.
"Master," said John, turning to regard me, every hair upon his sunburned face seeming to bristle, "think of the most sinful stench ever offended you, the most loathly corruption you ever saw, and there is his soul. Think of the devil with eyes like dim glass, flesh like dough, and a sweet, soft voice, and you have Alexo Valdez inside and out, and may every curse ever cursed light on, and blast him," says I.
"Are there many English prisoners in the Inquisition at Nombre?"
Why, I know of but one, though like enough there's more. They are so cursed secret, master.
Did ye ever hear of an English gentleman lost or taken hereabout some 6 years since and named Sir Richard Brandon?
Nay, I was slaving down Panama way 6 years ago. Is it him you come a-seeking of, master?
Aye, I nodded, a very masterful man, hale and florid and full of habit.
Nay, the only Englishman I ever seen in Nombre was old and bent with white hair and went with a limp, so it can't be him.
No, said I, frowning, no. After this, small chance had we for talk, by reason of the difficulty of our going, yet remembering all he had told. I had enough to think on, God knows. We had now reached a broken, mountainous country, very trying and perilous, what with torrents that foamed athwart our way, jagged boulders, shifting stones, and the like, yet John strode on untiring. But as for me, what with all this, the heat of the sun and the burden I carried, my breath began to labor painfully. The first thing I tossed away was my gun, that fell ringing and clattering down the precipitous rocks below. The next was my pack, and thereafter my hatchet and pistols, so that by the time we reached the top of the ascent, all I had to encumber me was my sword, and this I kept, since it was light and seemingly a good blade.
"Master," said John with a flourish of his ragged arm, "here's freedom! Here's God, land of milk and honey, given over to devils. Curse all Spanishers, say I."
Now looking around me, I stood mute in wonder, for from this height I might behold a vast stretch of country, towering mountains, deep shady valleys, impenetrable woods, rushing rivers, wide-stretching plains, and far beyond, a vague haze that I knew was the sea.
"And yonder, master," said John, pointing with his blowpipe, "yonder lieth Nombre, though you can't see it, the which we shall reach ere nightfall, wherefore it behooveth me to look to my artillery."
So saying, he squatted down upon his hams, and from his rags produced a small gourd, carefully wrapped about with leaves. Unwinding these, I saw the gourd to contain a sticky, blackish substance.
"Ah," said John, viewing this with gloating eyes, "snake poison is mother's milk to this, master. Here's enough good stuff to make poxy corpses of every cursed Spanisher in Nombre ere sunset. Here's that might end the sufferings of the poor Indians, the hangings, burnings, and mutilations. I've seen an Indian cut up alive to feed the dogs afore now. But here's a cure for cruelty, master."
While speaking, he had laid on the ground before him some dozen or so little darts, no longer than my finger, each armed with a needle-like point and feathered with a wad of silky fibers. The point of each of these darts he dipped into the poison, one after the other, and laid them in the sun to dry, which done he wrapped up the little gourd mighty carefully and thrust it back among his rags. And in a while the poison on the darts or arrows being dried to his satisfaction, he took forth a small leathern quiver of native make, and setting the missiles therein, shut down the lid securely and sprang to his feet.
"Here's sure death uncertain for some of the dogs, master," quoth he. "And now, if there be truly a god aloft there, all I ask is one chance at Alexo Valdez, as he burns women and maids, as tortures the innocent, as killed my friend and drove me into the wild. One chance, mister, and I'm done."
Thus he spake with eyes uplift, and one hairy hand upraised to the serene heavens, then with a nod to me set off along the hazardous track before us. of this, the last stage of our journeying, I will make no mention save that, footsore, bruised, and weary, I sank amid a place of trees and gloomy thickets as the sun went down and night came.
Straight afore you, about half a mile lieth Numbra, master, said John in my ear. Hearken, you may ear the dogs like bees in a hive, and be cursed to em.
And sure enough, I heard an indistinct murmur of sounds that was made up of many, and presently came others more distinct, the faint baying of a hound, the distant roll of a drum, the soft, sweet tolling of a bell.
So here you are, master, and good luck to you, said John,
and with scarce a rustle, swift and stealthy as an Indian, he was gone, and I alone in the gloom. Hereupon I debated with myself whether I should get me into the city straightway, or wait until the morrow, the which question was resolved by my falling into a sweet and dreamless slumber. Join me next time for another exciting chapter of Martin Conisbee's Vengeance by Geoffrey Farnall, here on Thrilling Tales of Adventure.